Hey there, Ed Gandia here, and welcome to this class on how to successfully raise your fees. So let's dive right into this. This is a very exciting topic, and I think one of the reasons why I feel so passionately about this and why I'm just pumped to share this information with you is that raising your fees is one of the most effective and fastest ways to boost your income. There are few other methods out there that give you such a quick income spike or have the potential to give you such a quick income spike and are also, at the same time, simple to carry out. Yet, even though that I found that to be true, raising your fees is also one of the most underused strategies out there. And I think there are several reasons for that. I think this whole idea of raising your fees creates a lot of stress in people, just a lot of anxiety. It feels confrontational. It's also tied to a lot of self-worth, self-confidence, imposter syndrome issues many of us wrestle with. And all of this typically comes from not doing the, not approaching this, the raising your fee thing the right way, not going about it the right way. And so you're dealing with all this and then you still try it, but you don't succeed because you haven't resolved all these issues or you're not going about this the right way. And of course, what does that do? It leads to failure. It leads to not being able to successfully raise your fees. It leads to resistance, clients being offended. And so then you pull back, right? Because now you're fearful these things didn't work and you really won't try it again because of your track record with this idea. You want to do it, but it hasn't worked. So you hold back. That causes more resentment. It causes more fear. It causes more problems. And it just leads to this vicious cycle of just bad stuff. Now, the good news is that there's a way up. There's a way you can increase your fees no matter where you are in your business life cycle right now. And the solution is a combination of three things. It's really a combination of mindset, shifting your mindset. It's a combination of strategy, just changing the strategy you're using. And then it's a combination of some simple tactics, some actual things you need to do and deploy, the real tactical stuff. In this training, I'm going to show you how to raise your fees the right way and how to shift your mindset, how to use effective strategies, and how to leverage repeatable tactics in a variety of different situations you might be facing today. And as you'll soon see, these ideas are simple. There's nothing in here that I think is going to be mind-blowing. I think I'm going to give you some clarity. I think I'm going to show you some things that are going to feel that are going to make you feel right away like, oh yeah, this is doable, of course. But there's no black magic involved here. You know, there's not, you know, this I'm not going to give you this spell that's you know, when you say it and you wave your magic wand, your clients are just going to be mesmerized by your words and just nod their heads in agreement. Yes, let's I'll pay you more. Nothing like that, okay? But that's the good news. These ideas are simple. This is something anyone can do. And I strongly urge you to take this stuff seriously and to walk away with some actionable steps and things you can do right away. Because again, these are things that can have an immediate impact. You know, it's not, in many cases, we're not talking about a huge delay. You know, there's so many other things that fall into that category where you do something and you change the way you do something and you got to wait months for it to really start bearing fruit. This is not the case. So if there was ever anything that I want you to act on right away would be this material. So let's start by getting some important things out in the open. And this first one might seem obvious, but you have to be worth it. You have to be worth a fee increase. I don't want you to read anything into this, but really the point here is you have to be already delivering an excellent level of service to your clients in order to raise your fees confidently. It has nothing to do with where you might be right now in your business cycle, whether you're really kind of still starting out, whether you've been doing this for 25 years. The point is you have to be delivering awesome work, awesome service. You have to be the kind of person who cares about the quality of your work and the value you deliver your clients. Now, I say that, but I also say that cautiously. I'm not trying to tell you that you have to be amazing or perfect, okay? you're probably undervaluing yourself. You're probably delivering more value than you realize. So I'm not saying that you need to, before you do anything, you need to do even better. I'm just saying, look, let's just, this is the obvious, right? You have to be doing some awesome work. And the reason you know this is your clients are telling you how much they appreciate you, how much they value you. They're giving you kudos on the work you turn in, that sort of thing, okay? It's normal to question your value sometimes. We all do it. But I want you to ask yourself, do you have repeat clients? Have you had some clients for a while? Do you get kudos for some of your clients? Again, there are people praising you for the work you do and your level of service or dedication. Those are all signs that you're worth it. One of the things that I started doing a few years ago is I started a kudos file. And this has been really big for me. A lot of people think that, you know, I have the great self-confidence and no, but I struggle with this stuff all the time, so much so that I had to start that kudos file because I question my value many times. You know, I'm susceptible to the imposter syndrome just like anybody else. And it's a file that I often pull out and read through when I'm feeling down and I'm just questioning my value. So I strongly suggest that no matter where you are, we all suffer through these things. It's a good idea to start that kudos file. That's going to help bring you back up when you're feeling down. And I'll say this, there's a very, very good chance that right now you're undercharging for your services. I'm not going to get into all the reasons for this, but I'll say that after being in this business for so long and working with hundreds of freelancers, I can tell you that most freelancers undercharge for their services and often by a lot. This is very common. I think we're in a business where many elements of this industry is a race to the bottom, and it's very easy to fall into the trap of assuming you have to go down that rabbit hole as well and follow the lead of kind of the bargain basement providers. And that just brings a lot of people down. You don't have to follow that lead. But there's a very, very good chance, believe me, that you're undercharging for your services. So 2 points here. You just got to remember that increasing fees must be based on providing excellent service. And there's a very good chance that you're undercharging for the work you do. So just keep that in mind as we move through this material. The next thing I wanted to mention is that you have to ask. That might seem obvious, but I think many of us act as if it's just going to happen on its own, as if clients are just going to say, you know what, I want to pay you more. I think I've heard of that happen like 2 or 3 times before in all the years I've been doing this. It's pretty rare. It's not going to happen on its own. Just assume that. You have to ask. You have to take the necessary steps to raise your fees, even when you're afraid to do so, okay? Rising prices are also an everyday reality in business. You're not breaking new ground here when you decide to bring your fees up. Rising prices, it's just the way it is. You know, everything from groceries to, I don't know, dog treats, clothes, computers, cars, landscaping services, medical treatment, all this stuff goes up. We understand this as consumers, and your clients understand this not just as consumers, but also as business people or whatever they might be doing, running an organization, running a department, whatever. So just because you provide a professional service doesn't mean that your fees shouldn't go up. You live in the same economy that we all live in where fees and prices are going up and pretty much everything we do. There are very few exceptions out there, you know, like TVs and so forth that just go down in price. A lot of technology goes down in price, but almost everything else just goes up, and this should not be an exception. Don't feel that you have a business where that does not apply, because that is not true. I guarantee you that your clients, if they're in business, they are raising their prices on a fairly regular level. I also don't want you to feel guilty about raising your fees. So along with this previous point of treating this as a reality of being in business, it's important that you don't feel the sense of guilt and unworthiness about this. I found that much of this pricing anxiety stems from feelings of inadequacy and feeling like a fraud. Again, the imposter syndrome, that's a very real thing. And many of us creatives struggle with this, feeling like a fraud. But I have some training on this topic, by the way. So if you suspect that some of this may be at play in your reluctance to raise your fees. I think it might be worth you going through that, and I can point you to it. But something that's worked really well for me is, and you got to find what works. Like, what are the triggers? If you think back at the times when you have raised your fees for a client or across the board, and I want you to think back at what worked. Like, what was the trigger and the motivation? I'll tell you, one of my strongest and most effective triggers is finding out that someone at my level or even below my level is charging considerably more than I am for some of the services I provide. That tends to snap me out of that current thinking pattern of, I don't know, I think I've priced myself out. I think I'm asking for too much. Who am I? Who do I think I am to be charging that? And I'll give you, there have been several examples of this throughout my career, but there was one that just always stands out. I was charging this client $5,000 for these white papers, and we were doing one about every quarter. I forget, but I had written a few of them. And the client had moved on, which is fine. But my contact there went to another company, and she wanted to do the same thing. And she wanted to hire me to write white papers. But at the time, I started to get really busy with other clients. And I told her I just couldn't, but I wanted to refer her a colleague of mine who I thought would do a great job. And there was this lady who I had met before at a networking event, and she was nowhere near where I was. I'm not saying, you know, I'm this elite writer, but I knew that she didn't have the experience that I had writing white papers. So I came to her all proud of my fee. I was charging $5,000 for these pieces. And I thought I was doing her a favor, basically handing her over this client, because my client said, yeah, sure, I please refer somebody to me. I don't know anybody else. And here I am, and I told my colleague what fee I was charging, and there was a bit of silence. And I got confused because I thought she would have said, oh my God, that's awesome. She said, well, actually, Ed, I charge $6,000. And that really fired me up, because I thought, you know, I've seen your stuff and you're good at what you do, but you don't have anywhere near the experience I have with these pieces, and you're charging $6,000. I'm not mad at you, and I didn't say this, but I'm thinking in my head, I'm not mad at her. I can't believe that. I thought I was, you know, charging a really good fee, and here she is. She's getting more than that, a lot more than that, and I'm not. So you got to find these little triggers that can, because that can take you from who am I to what in the world was I thinking, and they could do it in a matter of seconds. I'll give you another little exercise, a thought exercise about this guilt thing. I want you to calculate your average monthly income over the past 6 months. And I really want you to do this, okay? So you could do this in your head if you want, but if you can get some actual numbers, that's even better. So I want you to go back and somehow figure out what's been your average monthly income over the past 6 months. Then I want you to calculate the number of hours you typically work every week, okay? And then I want you to turn that into a monthly number. So that way you're comparing hourly income average with rough average monthly hours you put into your business, okay? So you have those two, and I want you to divide the two together. And you'll see that you're going to get your average internal hourly rate. That's going to be your number. So in other words, I'm generating this much income, and I'm putting this many hours into my business, both billable and non-billable. I'm just talking about total working time. And I'm willing to bet that that number is going to shock you. If you've never done this before, I'm telling you, do it. I will say this. For the coaching clients I've worked with where I've just showed them what that number is based on what they've shared with me in terms of average monthly income and average time they spend in their business every week and every month, it has been eye-opening. It's been a shocker. And I'll say that it's been a shocker in the low level. It's they were shocked at how little they're earning on an hourly basis. In fact, in many cases, it was below minimum wage. So if you want real motivation in snapping out of this guilt trip about, you know, I don't know if I really should do that. That may not be right. I don't know if I'm ready. I don't know if, you know, if I will lose some clients. That might snap you out of it. All right. Next point is that you need to work on the fear. So a lot of this, again, we're all very fearful, many of us, about doing this. And even though I just gave you some ideas on how you could overcome that fear, it's still, we can often hesitate. You know, what if the client balks at my, you know, my new rate or my new fee? What if I lose the client? What if that new prospect that I quoted a new higher rate to or fee goes elsewhere because I priced the project way too high? I will say this, experience has taught me that most of these fears are unfounded. These are often self-limiting beliefs, not reality. If somebody doesn't call us back, which is usually the case, we automatically think that radio silence is, we price it too high. That is a story you're telling yourself and a story you're buying into. And is it sometimes true? Yes, of course, sometimes it's true. But I would say that it's not true most of the time, or at least not most of the time when the client is someone who would be a good match for you. So you've determined you're both a good match for each other. You can do the work. You had a great conversation. You price this out. And for some reason, there's either silence or they decided to do something different. I would not automatically assume that you just priced it too high. That is the one assumption that almost all of us make immediately. And I find that in most cases, it's not that. And even when it is, I'll say this. Just because the client thought it was too high doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. Doesn't mean that you've overpriced yourself. That could be a problem that has nothing to do with you and there's nothing you can do about. I'll say this. I'm a business owner. I have a training and coaching business. If someone is willing to help me with, I don't know, let's just say Facebook ads, right, to generate new leads, and they want a $5,000 a month retainer, it's not that they're out of their minds. It's just that I'm not in a place where I can spend that kind of money on Facebook ads, you know? So from their standpoint, they should not lower their fee just because I can't afford it. It's an issue of affordability for me. And, you know, maybe there are other people in businesses like mine who can right now, but I just can't. It's not a priority. It's not in my budget. Nothing wrong with them. Nothing wrong with me. It's just not a match. They shouldn't automatically assume that they're overpriced. They might be, but more than likely they're not. It's just they were talking with the wrong person, the wrong prospect. And while we're discussing mindset, the mindset element of this, I want you to understand something. This is so important. The biggest reason for increasing your fee is not the increased income you're going to get. And I started off this discussion by really highlighting the fact that, you know, you could get a near immediate boost in your income that's noticeable. And that's important stuff. But that's a secondary benefit. The biggest reason is a change in mindset that will permeate every aspect of your business and your personal life in a very positive way. When you don't regularly raise your fees, you get stuck in that reality. And that becomes all you know. So you make all your business decisions based on that current reality of what's possible. You see everything in your business through that filter. And that might be okay at first, but when you do that, you're not growing and you're going to get stuck there. When you continue to push yourself and your fees incrementally, though, you start to create a new reality, a new normal, if you will, on a regular basis. And that's a very healthy thing. You're now making decisions and seeing every situation from a gradually improving filter. You have a different filter in place that allows you to make a different set of decisions because you see things differently. I'll give you an example. When I owned, and I want to take this outside of freelancing because I think this is so important that I really want you to understand this idea and this key takeaway. Back in the day, and this is when I was in college, I owned an old, unreliable car. And that reality, day to day, drove many of my life decisions. It drove the decisions on where I went, when I went to those places, the car had no air conditioning, and I was in Florida, which is hot like, you know, 11 and a half months out of the year. It drove decisions as to where I parked, because many times I had to push start my car. If you've ever done that before, it's a humbling experience. I think everyone should go through it at some point in their lives. It really gives you perspective when you finally do have a good car. So this was my reality, and I was in it for so long that I never really realized that there were other realities out there. To me, this is the world I lived in. I had an unreliable car, and I had to deal with that and alter what I did, when and how I did it because of that reality. But when I started seeing that this didn't need to be my reality, and I'll tell you when that happened. I one time the car was just, it's broken down. And in fact, I didn't even have money to fix it. So I had to get to work. I borrowed a friend's car that drove well and it was reliable. Now this car was not brand new, but it was so much better than what I had that I started realizing, oh man, so this is what the rest of the world is driving. You know, this is what the rest of the world experiences during their commute. They don't have to worry about the whole thing just breaking down or catching on fire. And when I drove his car and I started realizing this, my thinking just changed. I realized that I was living in a bubble just because it's the reality that I saw every day. It's amazing to me how easy it is to get caught in a belief pattern of clients won't pay more than $100 for a blog post, or I've never been able to get more than $2,000 for a white paper. You know, those kinds of beliefs. I fall into my own BS all the time. So listen, I'm not immune. But listening to others say these things is eye-opening because I know it's not true. I can tell you that till I'm blue in the face, but you're not going to believe it until you shift your reality, until you get out of your own current reality bubble, until you get into somebody else's car and you realize, wow, so this is what it's like, you know, to be in a different situation. So the question is, okay, Ed, but how do you tame that fear? You know, I understand you. I understand what you're saying intellectually, but emotionally, how do I deal with this? It's easier said than done. And I get it. But I find that there are many ways to do this, but the most reliable is to go about it indirectly or incrementally. When you do it that way, you find the courage needed to take just the first step. You don't need to plow right through the whole fear. You don't need to step into your panic zone. You just need enough courage to do the first thing. So for instance, an example of going about this incrementally is to raise your fees incrementally on your next new prospect. Or you can change the way you price some of your work to existing clients. So an example of going about it indirectly with existing clients is to pitch an existing client on moving to, let's say, a retainer model or a weekly rate that won't cost them more, but allows you to maybe shift some things around so that your internal hourly rate goes up. Now, we're going to discuss some of these ideas shortly, but the point here is that these are workarounds that help you get to the same result without going through the usual obstacles, so the usual fears, in other words. As we wrap up this section on mindset, I'll add a couple more things. And the first one is that positioning is key. A big reason why positioning is one of the first things I look at when I start working with coaching clients is that positioning is the driver for the business. How you position yourself will greatly help or hinder your ability to make serious improvements in your business. So good positioning gives you the right foundation for raising your fees. You need to be clear about the four key pillars of positioning. And the first one is what you do. Second one is for whom. The third one is what makes you different. And the fourth one is why that difference matters to this particular target market, the for whom, in other words. All right, anything for anyone is not good positioning, and it's going to make it very, very difficult to raise your fees. So not to get into positioning too much here, because I have other training on that topic that goes much deeper, and this is too important to just kind of gloss over, but positioning is a key factor, foundational factor, for your ability to raise your fees to a much higher and better level. And finally, I want you to start thinking in terms of the value you deliver to your clients. This is a natural extension of this previous point, but I want you to take it one step further. I'm not going to get into value-based pricing here because that's really a deeper discussion. But the product you create for your clients, that you deliver your clients, has a real monetary value, even if that value is difficult to define. I find that a lot of people push back on this idea because they say, well, I don't do direct response copywriting, for instance. So what I do is not really that measurable. It has nothing to do with that. Sure, if you do the kind of work that's easily measurable and tangible and can easily be tied to revenue or profits or cost reduction or any of those important things, then that's great. But many of us don't do that. But that's okay. There's still value to the client. And the more experience and specific expertise you have. So for instance, writing that kind of piece or knowing the target market or topic really well, those kinds of things. So the higher of that you have, the higher the value you bring to the project. So let me give you just an example so you understand where I'm coming from. Let's just say you write an article for a client that helps engage some of their prospects. And not only engages them, but it helps prospects understand that this is probably the leader or one of the top companies they should be considering for this equipment purchase, for instance. Now, notice that the sale has not been made yet. Okay, your article helped a prospect either notice a prospect, reframe their thinking, consider this potential company as one of their shortlisted suppliers, anything along those lines. Now, there's going to be a sales cycle here. There's going to be a period where that particular prospect who read the article is going to do some further investigation, look at other competitors of your clients, and so forth. But think about the impact that that article could have and where it could lead potentially, and what's the value of your client getting one more sale or one more client. You know, so consider all those things when you're thinking about it. So my target market is enterprise software companies, and a lot of what I wrote for them, in fact, most of it didn't generate an actual sale. Most of my clients' sales cycles were 12, 18 months, sometimes even longer. So what I wrote couldn't be directly tied to landing a $1 million client, for example, or customer. However, we all understood that getting these pieces right was important in engaging some of these prospects that could eventually lead to a $1 million sale. So I want you to start thinking about the service you deliver. So when I say your product, I mean the service, your product, in terms of the value of A, getting it right, and B, and this is key, getting it wrong. So let's talk about getting it right. Imagine a few different scenarios where the article, again, leads to a positive outcome. So again, our article is out there. It's really good. A prospect is now intrigued. They dig deeper into the company. They get on your client's mailing list. Maybe they buy an entry-level product 2 weeks later, and then maybe eventually they buy a higher-end offering 6 months after that, okay? Think about the series of events and how, because of that article, that became the first step in a multi-step process. Now, let's look at getting it wrong, and I think this is the one that many of us don't think about. Let's assume that's the same situation. It's an article, but let's just say that there's a negative outcome because the client isn't even able to publish it at first if you get it wrong, because now it's not right. You didn't get it right, and now the client has to struggle with you to get the article right, and now she has to waste a lot of time going back and forth with you. Think about what would happen. You know, this is something that should have gone online 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, but it's still not even ready. What is the opportunity cost of that article not going online? And what about her lost time? Lost time, opportunity costs, ending up having to maybe hire another writer and start from the very beginning, somebody who actually gets the industry or understands the topic better or has more experience in this area or is easier to work with. Think about the risk, okay? So many times it's not necessarily, again, anything tangible and monetary. Many times it's something that's intangible and that has to do with more with risk or other factors that are similar to that that still point to value. So I want you to start thinking along those lines, both positive and negative in terms of opportunity costs and what the cost would be to your client if they ended up working with somebody who doesn't get it right or is really a pain to work with or any of those factors. All right, so let's get into more the strategy and the tactics here. When we talk about raising your fees, I want you to think about, we're really talking about two different opportunities. You can raise your fees for one, new prospects, and or existing or past dormant clients. Okay, so we got new prospects, and then the other category is either current clients or past or dormant clients. Okay, I recommend doing both, but you have to take a different approach for each. So let's discuss that, and we're going to spend the rest of our time together talking about these different scenarios. Let's start with new prospects because this one is simpler. New prospects are really the best and easiest way to raise your fees and boost your income. You know, when you're talking about actually making an impact on your bottom line, actually helping your pocketbook, the biggest opportunity in terms of amount is going to be here. The biggest opportunity to make huge increases over time in your income is going to be with new prospects. So here's what I recommend, and it's actually very simple. I want you to commit to raising your fees on your next new prospect by 10%. Okay, 10%, very simple. Sometimes I advise a little bit more, but I want to be conservative here because I actually want you to do it. So I want you to raise your fees on your next new prospect, not an existing client, next prospect who you find. You know, you talk about Project X, great. Before it was $2,000, that's where you were used to charging. I want you to push yourself and charge $2,200 and quote that. And I want you to keep doing that until you start getting lots of resistance. So let's say you land that project. And by the way, I find, and we'll talk more about this, that you'll find that you've probably been undercharging. That's when really when you see it, when suddenly you get prospects saying, okay, sure, that sounds great. When can we get started? And you just put $200 in your pocket. Next prospect, let's assume it's the same project. It could be something else. I want you to, not $2,200 now, it's now $2,420. So in other words, 10% from your last benchmark, okay? If you realize that you're way undercharging, so if you know, as we're having this discussion, you're listening to what I'm recommending here, and you realize, you know what, that 10%, that's not going to be no problem because I'm way undercharging. Then I recommend pushing yourself a little bit more for the first couple of new opportunities you come across and quote 20% higher than what you've been getting for that project in the past or currently. And then you could bring it down to 10% for every new prospect after that. But you know, if you need to give yourself a little boost coming right out of the gate, 20% is fine. At a minimum, I'd say, look, just try it. 10% on your next new prospect. You're going to be surprised by what you get. In 90% of cases, I found that every coaching client I've worked with who's tried this has succeeded, usually on the first time they try it. And if you get a no, don't let that discourage you. It doesn't mean it was a foolish move. It just means they weren't the right prospect for you right now. And it's important that you recognize this. I don't want you to shy away from this just because the first time you tried it, it didn't work. Again, in most cases, you will get a yes, everything else being equal. So two things will happen here. First, you're going to get an immediate boost in income by doing this, which is awesome. Again, that example, $2,200, you just put $200 in your pocket, $200 extra. Second, you'll start creating a big disparity between what you're earning with old clients and what you're earning with new clients. And eventually, that will give you the motivation and confidence you need to start increasing your fees for existing clients. So yes, raising your fees to new clients, new prospects, it's incredibly important because it creates a domino effect, a huge multiplier, if you will, in your business. It impacts much more than that just quick win of $200 or whatever it is. It really has a far-reaching effect that's going to help you with a lot of different things in your business and then create that compounding or multiplier effect. All right, so that's new prospects, okay? Again, the biggest opportunity, the easiest opportunity is there. They don't know what you charge, so you know, might as well try a little bit higher and let's just see where you start getting resistance. But don't let that first one be the indicator. You need to start seeing a pattern before you know where you're starting to get resistance. Okay, let's talk about existing or past or dormant clients, however you want to refer to them. So in other words, these are not new people. These are people who either are doing business with you right now or they have in the past. You can and should raise fees for your existing or dormant clients, but I want you to consider these three things. First of all, it's not as easy as it is for new prospects. Two, it's not going to yield the biggest or fastest boost to your income because, again, new prospects are going to do that. And three, you have to go about it differently. Now, it doesn't matter what you're charging a client or how low you're charging. You've created an expectation with that client. And it's just human nature to treat a price increase negatively, even if it's just incremental, even if they just know that maybe you're undercharging. It doesn't matter. It's just human psychology. You know, it's funny to me that gas prices. So gas goes up from, let's say, $2.50 a gallon to $3 a gallon overnight. You know, that happens occasionally. It's like a big jump. And people act as if their rent just went up by $500 or $1,000 a month. It's crazy. When in reality, if they sat down to think about it, their weekly fuel spend has just gone up by, say, $10 or $20 a month. Listen, I know that there are situations where, yeah, but you know, some people are on a really tight budget. They have like no room, no margin for error. I'm not talking about those situations. I'm just talking about the average person who get $10 or $20 more a month in gas, you know, yet they don't bat an eye at wasteful spending. You know, this is the person who complains and thinks it's the end of the world, yet they go out and waste $20 on some gadget that, you know, they'll never use after today. So my point is, it's just human nature. You've created an expectation. And then going up from there, it's just really, really difficult for people. It's not that they're bad people. It's just human nature. We all do this. This is the natural way we react. So the first question you need to ask yourself when it comes to people who have done business with you either currently or in the past, so current or past clients, the question is, whom do you want to keep? This is a really good question to ask yourself, not just now. I think this is something you should be asking yourself every year. There's nothing wrong with losing clients every year. Your job is not to keep every client. Your job is to land and keep clients that are a good fit for you. You know, General Electric, GE, under the CEO, Jack Welch, and he was a little bit controversial. I don't want to get into the controversy here, but there are some things in here that I think are generally applicable and some great lessons to us all. He was really big on getting rid of lagging businesses and bad customers and underperforming employees. And he had this very scientific view of this, where he said, look, every year we should be getting rid of the bottom 20%. You know, if a customer is just not a good, they're like at the bottom, employees who just continue to underperform, businesses, for their philosophy was, you know, if we can't be number one and number two in a business, we need to get out of it. Okay. And you know what? This was a healthy thing overall. GE became, I mean, they went from they were lagging, they were suffering. In Jack Welch, part what he did is just introduce these new philosophies, and they went to the top of their field. I mean, this is one of the most admired companies in America. Now, again, let's not get into the controversy. The point here is, it's a very natural and probably a healthy thing to do, to get rid of the bottom 20%. When you do this, here's what happens. You make room for better clients and better situations, okay? When you automatically get rid of the underperforming clients and situations, you make room for better situations, better clients. So how do you decide which ones to let go? Well, there's several things you need to consider. First, consider the value of each client. And a good way to do this is to figure out your internal hourly rate as best you can for each of your clients. Now, what do I mean by that? How do you calculate that? Very simple. This is when it really pays to keep some records. You don't have to do anything crazy. You don't have to buy software. You can do this with a simple spreadsheet. Look at how much you're earning from the client and then track how much time you're spending on the work And I would even add on managing the client, because many times a lot of what you're doing is managing, and it's not directly billable work, but you're having to shuffle a lot of things for this client, maybe meetings and so forth. Unless you count all of that as billable, that's fine. But try to get a general feel for the value of each client. And an internal hourly rate for each client is a really good measure. Consider their work consistency. You know, how consistent are they in awarding you work? Consider the hassle factor. You know, how stressful is it to work with them? How much respect do they have for you, your value, what you do? Are they low maintenance, high maintenance, somewhere in the middle? Just consider these intangibles. Consider the people you work with, what they're like, how you like working with them. Consider the topics that you're writing about or working on. How do they impact your own happiness? Again, the people and the topics. How happy does it make you to think, oh, today I get to work on, you know, ABC company? Pay attention to your reaction to that. If you cringe, that's a sign there might be a problem. And then factor in your interest and passions. You know, that there are clients we sometimes take because, let's just say that it has to do with a cause or an initiative or a topic or a product that's near and dear to your heart. So that's okay, and you should factor that in. Sometimes, you know what? I'm working with this company. They're doing some amazing things in education. I'm really passionate about that. Doesn't pay really well, but you know what? I love the people, and I really believe in what they're doing. I think that's perfectly fine and acceptable. It shouldn't all be about the bottom line. Now, one of the solutions that a lot of freelancers rely on is for clients that are on the higher maintenance side and where they score negatively in each of these areas I just mentioned, the natural tendency is just to raise the rates or fees on those clients. But I would argue that many times you're better off letting them go, letting the bottom go, than to continue raising your fees on them. Because you know what? At first, you're going to feel good about it. Well, you know, they're a real pain, but you know, they're paying me a lot of money. I've been able to get my fees up with them. And in fact, I make more on them than anybody else. But you know what? The impact that has just your psyche and your love of the work and your business, it's hard to measure that. So I'm not saying you need to do this overnight, but if you were a client that just scores really high on everything else monetarily, but they're just not a good client in every other way, I would start working on a plan to get rid of them as quickly as possible. All right, so how do you let these people go? You know, if you decided, you know what, I need to get rid of this one. Well, I would explain very simply that you've decided to move on. Something to the effect of your other clients are paying you more based on the value you deliver for them, and you can no longer afford to keep working at the entry-level fee or at the rate from however many months ago or however many years ago, and you feel it's best for you and for them to move on. Of course, be courteous here. Give them time, if appropriate, to find a replacement. If they'd be a good client for a colleague who's at a different level from where you are right now, consider making an introduction and maybe even pre-planning that with your colleague. And try not to worry about hurting their feelings or the pain or confrontation of doing this. It's business. It's going to be uncomfortable. You'll get better at it with practice. My friend Elise Bennin has a saying, you can't afford to keep the clients you've outgrown. And I love that. I have a slightly different version of that. I say you won't grow if you keep clients you've outgrown. Okay, so keep in mind, when you get rid of the bottom, you make room for the top. You make room for better clients. They're going to make you happier and put more money in your pocket. So what should you do with the clients you want to keep? We just talked about the ones that are probably best you letting them go. What's the best way to raise your fees on the ones you do want to keep? Well, there are a couple of different approaches. One is a blanket approach. The other one is kind of a spot approach where you're addressing each potential client individually. Let's start with a blanket approach. I recommend making a fee increase an annual practice. This is a very natural way of doing it. Again, businesses in all industries do it all the time. And an annual frequency is very organic. It's very natural. It's easier to explain to clients. It's a great opportunity to go ahead and do this toward the end of the year. So my recommendation is to wait till the fourth quarter, or as you're entering the fourth quarter, for instance, every September, just mail out a letter or send out an email to your clients announcing an across-the-board increase. Now, in terms of format, that's up to you. However, I would say make sure they get it. That's why I mentioned letter. If you snail mail a letter, there's probably a higher chance that they'll see it than an email. And you may want to do both. You can specify, if you wanted to, that for X, Y, and Z projects, the new fees will be so-and-so. Okay, so you know, you can be more specific. You don't just have to say, you know, a 10% increase or whatever. You could even say for these projects, or these are some examples, or you could tailor it to each client based on what they're doing with you. I also recommend, if you do this, and I suggest you do this, to give your clients a grace period. For instance, if you make the announcement in late September, give them the fourth quarter, October through December, to on the current rate. So allow a period of adjustment, and your new fees will be effective January 1st. This could even, and I've seen this happen before, could even be an incentive to award you and maybe even prepay a stack of projects for you at the current rate before the increase. Many times this coincides with a client, especially in the corporate market, who's on a fiscal year end of December 31st, and it's actually in their best interest to go ahead and award you some work to use up some budget that they haven't used up before it goes away. So this could actually work out and be a real win-win. What increase is sensible? That's something a lot of people ask me about. And there's no hard and fast rule here, but I found that generally speaking, a 10% annual increase is about right. It's aggressive enough to make a difference in your pocketbook, but not so high and sudden in frequency that you'll send the wrong message to your clients. 5% just feels too sheepish and insignificant for the work and stress this effort may cause you. I think 10%, you're really starting to make a difference, and it will make a positive difference in your business, and it won't turn off most of the clients or most good clients. And we'll talk more about how to present this and what to do if you get resistance. Now, to help you gather the motivation, courage, and justification for your increase, I suggest asking yourself these questions. Number one, when was the last time you had an increase to your existing clients, a fee or a rate increase to your existing clients? Number two, how big was that increase if you've had one? Number three, has your value increased to your clients since your last fee increase? And hopefully the answer is yes. I mean, hopefully you're now a more valuable asset to your clients than you were, say, a year ago, if you did have some of these clients a year ago. And in fact, the longer you stay with a client, this is important to keep in mind, by the way, the longer you stay with them, the more indispensable you become. I mean, think about, I've had clients that were with me for 7 years. That was actually the record. After a year or two, I became too valuable for them. I mean, think about having to start from scratch with a new writer. It just wasn't worth it. I knew too much about their products, services, about their target markets, about how they communicated, about their key messages to really start out with somebody brand new. I got it. That was less hand-holding on their part. I became indispensable. And there's, even though I am earning more if I keep my fees the same, yet they take me less time to produce, why not also try to increase these rates or fees incrementally and also help on the other end? So you're really benefiting in both ways. You're becoming much more efficient with the work, so your internal hourly rate is higher. But if you increase your fees incrementally as well, then you're boosting your income that way also. The fourth question is, did you go in really low with some of your clients in order to land the client or the work? And if so, are you losing money on some of your projects because of this? And finally, number five, how do your fees compare to other writers or copywriters in this target market or similar target markets at the professional level? And that's key, because if you say, well, how do you compare? I know the fees could probably be all over the board. There's a huge component of bargain basement providers out there. I don't want you to even consider those. You're not in that category. But at the professional level, How do your fees compare? Ask around, look around. This internal self-reflection is going to likely shine a spotlight on one or more clients where an increase might be necessary outside of an annual blanket increase of 10%. There's no reason to wait for that increase in September, for example, or January 1st to make that move. And I'll give you an example. Let's say you severely underpriced your work for this client because you were trying to get your foot in the door, or you miscalculated or misread the project scope or other factors that make it really hard right now to earn a good profit on the work you're doing for them. In situations like that, the increase should be a spot increase, not necessarily part of a blanket announcement. So you should approach that client now and make a case for bringing their fees up. Which brings us to persuading clients. How do you persuade a client, somebody you want to keep working with, to accept the increase? Well, first, you need to do this on a case-by-case basis. You know, don't try to apply a standard formula or a template across the board. Treat each situation differently because each client in each situation is going to be different. Second, I want you to think of this as a conversation, not a confrontation or a breakup of any kind. You're just trying to bring up a concern that you want to resolve. You want to find common ground. And your hope is not that you get your way. Your hope is, look, I need to address this with them and let's just start a conversation and let's see where it goes. I think that needs to be the attitude and the mindset you need going into the conversation. So here's some language you can use as the basis for your conversation starter on increasing your fee. And this is based on what my buddy Elise Benham uses in these situations. I just altered a little bit based on what works better for me. But, you know, again, this is just some kind of boilerplate language that you can adapt yourself. Most clients are paying X for the service. That's more in line with professional level fees for that particular service, but your fee hasn't increased in Y months or years, which is fine, but I'd like to bring you more in line with my current fee structure. What would be fair to you? How can we make this work? Okay, notice this is an opener. You're not saying, hey, from now on, I can't afford to keep doing that. From now on, here's going to be the new fee. This is the new fee. This is the new rate. Sorry, but that's the best I can do. Nothing like that. Notice the approach, you know, especially those last two questions. What would be fair to you? How can we make this work? Here's my situation. Here's my dilemma. You know, I can't keep doing that. Let's work something out. What can we do here? It's okay to negotiate with a client. Again, this is a conversation, not any kind of ultimatum or anything like that. So I want you to listen to the client and see if you can find some way to compromise. Keep in mind that price or the fee is not the only thing you can negotiate. If that's a huge sticking point for them, offer to negotiate other things such as payment terms or the amount of work you do or the frequency, the projects you're doing for them or some other intangible. Let's say, and this is where you can really get creative, let's say a personal introduction to a really good prospect inside or outside the organization. You know, things like that, as long as you put some parameters around it, so it's not I'm going to introduce you to a lot of people. That's not good enough. You need to get a little more specific. But those are just some examples. The key here is to try to find a win-win situation. That's what a good negotiation is. It's not one side compromising against the other side or neither side getting really a bad deal. You want both sides to win. That's the only rule of a good negotiation, or the top rule, is both sides need to win. So what can you do? How creative can you get to find something that will help them win, but then also help you win? The final thing I would say about starting this conversation with clients and having this communication is don't do this via email. It's okay to set up a call via email where you can discuss this. So it's okay to coordinate this over email, but make sure to discuss this via phone. I find that if you try to do this over email, too much could get lost in translation. And there are few conversations, and this is one of them, where you should have a real conversation and make sure that you have an opportunity to present your ideas and to come across the right way and not take a chance that some of this might be misconstrued. And that's when you really risk this thing going wrong, is when you try to do this over email. All right, finally, I wanted to present some creative ideas and really more of a framework or just kind of get you thinking a little differently about what's possible here and how you could approach some situations that maybe are a little bit more difficult or unique. So here are some ideas to consider as part of your negotiation process if and when that happens, or as an alternative to a straight up spot increase for a client. And I'll give you three. This will hopefully get you thinking. The first one is to offer an upsell or cross-sell opportunity. So an upsell, think of an upsell as an add-on. And I always think of McDonald's. You order something, oh, great, you want fries with that, right? That's an upsell. You've ordered a cheeseburger, and that's all you said, and the clerk says, well, do you want fries with that? And a certain percentage of people say, yeah, sure, go ahead. A cross-sell, I always think of Amazon. Amazon, you add an item to your cart, or you're looking at an item, and they always say, okay, well, that's, you know, you're looking at this. Customers who bought that product also looked at or bought these products. So these are related complementary items, okay? They're not, it could end up becoming an upsell, but what makes it not an upsell is the fact that it doesn't add necessarily. It's not part of the original product. It's just a product that's related to it. And whenever possible, you want to offer either an upsell or a cross-sell that's an added service to the core service that won't take you that much more time to create, but has a high perceived value to the client. So sometimes it could be seen as more of an upsell. Sometimes it could be more of a cross-sell, again, a complimentary service. I'll give you an example. A one-page white paper summary for each white paper you write for an additional $300 or $400. So let's just say kind of a one sheet that the sales people could use as a handout rather than giving prospects the whole white paper. Lots of different uses for that. Maybe taking your white paper and turning it into a sales presentation or a PowerPoint or a webinar or vice versa. So some of these things, again, depending on how they fit together, could be an upsell, could be a cross sell. I don't want you to get hung up on which is which. The point is you could offer other services that are complementary or add-ons that could put a lot of money in your pocket. It won't take a lot of extra work. That's why they're so profitable. Yet the client sees it as a great value add. You know, an editorial calendar or an editorial calendar management service or project management for maybe a lot of the social media or blogging or some of the other marketing activities your client might be doing. Maybe you're just doing the writing right now, but they're trying to kind of cobble all that together and do their best managing that internally, and they're having trouble with that. You could offer that as an add-on service. And because this is something new, there's no benchmark right now created. So you have a little bit more latitude in what you quote, and you can make sure that you quote it at a profitable level, which could help offset maybe some of the lower profit or lower margin work you're doing for that client. Another creative idea is to offer a monthly retainer deal to your client that enables you to essentially sweep project fees or hourly rates under the rug, right? So once it's a retainer deal and, you know, we can work on any of these things, and it depends how you want to set it up. There's lots of possibilities. You're getting away from, let's say, an hourly situation, or you're getting away from a situation where you're quoting a fixed fee for this type of project that they're doing a lot of, but maybe there's some variability, enough variability where you can say, you know what, I'll tell you what, I'll quote you a flat monthly fee, and we can do up to so many of these, or maybe a combination of these things. And now it's a little bit harder for them to see an increase there. And maybe sometimes you end up doing a little bit more work, but if you structure it right, it could be the kind of situation where you're doing a little bit less, or you're able to do it more profitably, or you're adding some things that they weren't having you do before. And those things, you're now helping you beef up your profitability with that client. Another idea would be to start offering three options or price tiers, if you will, on every quote you put out there that you give to a new or existing client. It could be a high-end option, then a middle-of-the-road option, and then a bare-bones option. I found that many clients, both new and existing, will go for the first two you know, the high end or the middle of the road instead of the bare bones. And sometimes what I know I've done many times in the past is just they wanted this bare bones thing, so that's what I'm quoting them. Well, why not offer some other things, you know, that they might be interested in? Sometimes bringing in, you know, a designer, for example, or other professional, creative professional to offer a more comprehensive solution will allow you to offer a high-end option or a middle-of-the-road option with some added services that maybe you wouldn't ordinarily offer. And that will enable you to add some big markups to the work of these other creative professionals that puts more money in your pocket without having to announce a spot price increase to that particular client. Of course, the best approach is to combine two, three, or more of these ideas to create a real multiplier effect in your business. You know, for instance, raising your fees to new prospects who don't know what you normally charge by 10 or 20%. So next new prospect, charge 10% more than you normally would. Combined with an annual blanket increase to most of your clients, except for the ones that you may address individually. And that's the next point, the spot increases. And then getting creative with some of these solutions. And combining all of these, you'll see a serious compounding effect that will have an immediate positive impact on your income. Bottom line, again, raising your fees is one of the biggest, most important levers for increasing your income. And let's just face it, your overall happiness in your freelance business. This is something that I would do, and I would do starting today. And my hope is that you've walked away with at least two or three action items that you can work on starting immediately. Simple things you can start deploying right away to start getting the benefits and creating a positive cycle in your business. I'm going to leave you with one final thought. This is a two-way street. Working with clients is a two-way street. Many of us feel that when we approach clients, especially existing clients, about a price increase, whether it's a spot increase or an across-the-board annual increase, that we are on the brink of losing one or more clients. That, you know, any one thing that we do, and that means we're going to lose a client. But the truth is that clients are under just as much pressure to keep us as service providers as we are to keep them as clients. And don't ever forget that. I bet that if you do good work, if you're great at what you do and you add value to your clients' businesses and organizations, there's just as much pressure on their end to keep you and to keep you happy because you help them do their work better. You help add value to their organization. So don't forget that. There's just as much pressure on the other end many times to keep you and to keep you happy as there is for you to keep the client.